It also results in more network bandwidth overhead. But again, I'm going to try and keep this at a higher level. I'm not going to delve into the really deep technical details here. Player supports the format, and LiveWire is just standard 24-bit, 48 kilohertz audio, so you can look at it on a network with just about anything. It supports discovery and advertising of sources on the network, and that's important because if you've got all this traffic on the network, what good is it if you don't have a way to find it? I mean, otherwise you'd have to look it up on a list, you know, on a paper, kind of like the old paper wire list and punch lists that we're all familiar with. LiveWire supports discovery and advertising of sources, so you know what's actually out there and available on the network. Ah, here's an important one. You've got to control things on the network. It supports GPIO. You're always going to have a need for controlling those devices on the network, turning mic lights on and off, starting and stopping CD players, various other devices on the network. It supports LWRP and LWCP routing and control protocols. Again, what good is a system without some means of controlling it? And these are both mechanisms for controlling a LiveWire network. It supports metering of the audio on the network. It supports remote control of the various resources on the network. And it provides for web GUI-based management. All right, so how does AES-67 fit into this? Most of you have probably heard about AES-67 by now. It's a new standard, and it actually has been ratified as a standard by AES for audio over IP. That's great. We all like standards, right? We want our stuff to talk to other stuff, regardless of whose stuff it is. Okay, so like LiveWire, AES-67 is an audio over IP standard. It has interoperable streams with moderate latency at 1 millisecond packets and less than 6 milliseconds network latency. Lower and higher network latency streams are possible, but optional. So many of you probably know that in a live environment, when you've got like a microphone going to headphones, latency is the enemy. You want to keep the latency as low as possible. So it's good to be flexible in that regard. Other sources doesn't necessarily matter. So there's some flexibility there, just like with LiveWire. It supports both multicast and unicast, and this is important because a lot of networks don't support multicast traffic. If you've got like a wide area network, for instance, that's not set up to route multicast across the entire network, a lot of video networks, microwave networks that have been set up specifically for the purpose are already doing this, but some networks aren't. So it's good to be able to support multicast and unicast. It supports, how many of you are familiar with voice over IP? Okay, a good number of you. Well, AES-67, that term should seem familiar, SIP. It uses the same protocol, SIP, for connection management on a network. In other words, setting up a connection between various resources. Ah, now, what doesn't it support? It doesn't have a mechanism in and of itself for supporting GPIO and contact closures. There's no really defined mechanism for controlling. I mean, SIP will establish and break down connections, but there's otherwise no comprehensive mechanism for routing and control protocols. There isn't any internal mechanism for metering or for remote control. And there's no kind of centralized web GUI. The device may have it, you know, may have some web GUI, but there's no way of consolidating all of that, per se, built into the protocol. So what's the value of a standard that doesn't include some of those critical features? Well, there is a value there. First of all, it is an industry standard. It allows for vendor interoperation. It enables convergence of studio audio, broadcast, telecom, and intercom systems. I mentioned voice over IP, audio over IP. Many of you use intercoms in like a television plant, for instance. That can all be consolidated into this technology as well. And it's the foundation of future evolution of professional audio systems. Again, don't stop thinking about tomorrow. We think this is really the direction that the industry is headed. Standards are a good thing. All right, so back to LiveWire. Okay, it provides all of that. Now, what's the one thing that LiveWire doesn't or didn't currently, you know, didn't provide at the time? Aha, LiveWire Plus. AES-67 standard streams are now part of LiveWire. So, what's this mean? We've got some protocols up there, including LiveWire, Ravenna, Dante. Okay, great. They all have various levels of capability, but they're kind of up against a wall. They're really not necessarily designed to be extensible and incorporate changes that might come forward in the future. What we've done with LiveWire, this one was starting to suffer some intermittence, and it was time to move on. Are those DAT decks on the left?
Yes, they are.
Public radio stations, at least they used to. Anybody recognize that? Yeah, an old Rockwell Collins IC-10A. Now, as I mentioned, they had a number of ISDN and IP codecs, and they were trying to do remotes and do phoners and various other things. Pretty active, an increasingly active newsroom. And imagine trying to do that on a console that was not designed with even one mix minus bus in the first place, let alone multiple. And yeah, there are workarounds that you could put in place for that, but it really got to be an untenable situation in a real hurry. Okay, so here's the core that they had before. You can see there's a Leech 32 by 32 audio router there. There's the control panel, there's the routing frame. That was pretty much what was driving the entire facility and routing all of the audio around the facility between these various analog studios and these various program paths. And it was really starting to get flaky. Automation would send it a command and it just would refuse to respond. And along with that, they had a bay full of Leech analog distribution amplifiers, also slowly starting to fail. So, aha. Remember what I mentioned earlier? Imagine a whole facility full of that. 66 blocks everywhere, not documented very well. It was getting to be pretty untenable. All right, so that was them. Let's talk about where they are now and where they've gone. They started out by investing in a single Axia element control surface and the associated hardware for the main control room. And that consisted of the control surface, a mix engine, a GPIO power supply, and a couple of audio nodes to get some auxiliary audio in and out of the system. And this was just kind of to do some experimenting. Well, actually, prior to that, they had just bought a couple of nodes just to kind of experiment with the technology and see what it could do for them. So the cost after they'd bought the control surface at the time was about $15,000. And this was a couple of years later, after they'd kind of started doing that, Axia introduced a lower cost surface option for around $6,000. That was a little 8-fader surface with an included audio engine. And that was ideal for the smaller production rooms. So when they introduced that at the time as their chief engineer, I said, "Oh, I'll take four of them." That takes care of the production rooms, and we put the element in the main control room. So it actually worked out really well. Kind of on a side note here, the general manager of the station at the time, as I was showing him the technology, he looked at it and he went, okay, well, for the cost and all of the benefits, if you look at any one of those benefits, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But if you take the whole package and look at what it does on the whole and what it could do in our facility, then it really does start to make sense. So the general manager was on board, and that was important, getting buy-in from the general manager on this project. So once this lower cost option came out, it was let's keep going with this project. It was a modular approach. The system grew out over several years so they could spread the cost of the project out. And that's important too, because I know budgets at a lot of stations are crunched, even more so today than they had been in the past. And it's scalable to support additional program streams and sources. Need more program streams or sources, just add another node, add another surface, and there you go. Easier to maintain and configure, and just a lower overall total cost of ownership. And we were able to demonstrate this, actually. I kept track of the maintenance records on the analog plant before it was transitioned into this AOIP plant. And the cost to maintain it did, and just the labor overall, did plunge pretty significantly. Okay, so here's the after picture. A lot nicer. The DAT decks are gone, of course. You can see in the middle there, That's an element surface. This picture is a little bit older, so the studio has changed even more since then. And then over on the right-hand side, we've got an LCD with pretty comprehensive metering for the console and just a status display. So it gives them kind of a heads-up display. Yes, there are operators that actually do still look at meters. So. And here's one of the production rooms after. So all four of the production rooms got a similar setup here. We have the Axia Radius console. Here's the core, which is a power supply. It has some audio I/O just above those two CD players there. So kind of a nice little all-in-one drop-in console replacement for those rooms. And it just plugged straight into the network, and suddenly everything that was on the network was available in these studios. Once the operators started getting used to dialing up these sources in the studios, once they got used to the idea of any source, any fader, any studio, any purpose, it kind of blew their minds. It took a little while for them to get used to that. Okay, so as part of the whole project, they also built out a new tech center here. One of the other things that AOIP allowed them to do was consolidate a lot of gear and just connect to the studios via IP. I mean, they could have left it spread out around the studios, but it really didn't make sense. They didn't really have a consolidated tech core. But again, that's one of the cool things, is that you can architect the system any way you want. Here's one of the features that I really kind of liked. Gave them the ability to see all of their audio paths at a glance, just on a heads-up display there. So that's something that's it's pretty valuable if you've got a very active plant, got a number of stations and a number of sources coming in and going out. Yeah, in this case, there are still punch blocks, but they serve a completely different purpose now. They're much more organized. We moved from 66 blocks to chrono blocks, and all documented. Now, instead of carrying analog audio or AES audio or DC, who can guess what most of these blocks now carry? Take a wild guess. Close. Ethernet connections. So, chrono blocks, multi-pair Cat5e cable run between the studios. Suddenly with four pairs, you've got your entire facility and all the audio that's on your network available anywhere around your plant. Okay, so here's kind of another example of what they did. And again, this picture's a little bit older. These are a couple of audio nodes. These in particular are 8x8. Now we have the X nodes, which are half that size and do 4x4 each. But this was their satellite rack. It allowed them to take a whole bunch of all the satellite receivers, the satellite uplink and downlink that I mentioned, and consolidate them onto the AOIP network. Now, these satellite receivers are for the public radio satellite system. They should look very familiar to some of you in commercial radio as well, because they're basically the same receiver. Four-channel receivers from International Data Casting with a live wire connection. So that allowed them to put those directly on the AOIP network, along with the GPIO and contact closure. So now, instead of having four audio channels from each of those receivers plus all the GPIO, now you've just got one Ethernet connection from that receiver carrying your audio and your GPIO onto your network to anywhere in your plant. So, benefits, any source, anywhere. They can now do any show or any operational function in any of their studios. It's a distributed system. There's no single central router, and it can be more easily designed to minimize single points of failure. Since it's based on standard networking architecture, the sky's the limit. I mean, this is not, IP networking technology is mature. You can build an IP network any way you want. There are a bunch of right ways, and there are a bunch of wrong ways to do it. But we won't get into the details of that here. But you can build it as robust as, well, as the budget will allow. It's easier to configure and manage. It allows for, and this is a big one, Chris Tarr can kind of attest to this. I know he's in the room. He's done this several times, and I've seen his posts on Facebook, where he'll dial into his Axia systems remotely and change something, or a host in the morning goes, oh, I need this or this or this. I forgot about this, this, and this. Oh, okay, click, 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 done. Try doing that with 66 blocks and a punch tool from your house. Not going to happen. So, no more mix-minus issues. That was definitely a big one. Need a mix minus, just define it when you're setting up the source. The system will handle it automatically for as many as you need. And they were still able to integrate other manufacturers' equipment into the system, such as codecs, satellite receivers, et cetera. And now with the AES-67 capabilities that have been added in LiveWire Plus, that opens it up even further. So there may be another third-party device that you can put on your network that you won't need to hit with, you know, you won't need to go through a node. Finally, less regular maintenance required. There were no more mechanical failing switches in consoles. The consoles, as I'm sure you guys know if you're familiar with audio over IP, they don't carry any audio. It's all just data. The console is a giant control surface. Think of it as a giant keyboard and mouse. Now, no system is without growing pains. And since this was a transition that happened over time, it had a few growing pains. Nothing insurmountable, no real showstoppers. They were on the air through this whole transition that spanned over the course of about 5 years, and no major outages as a result of the transition. But here's the thing. In their facility, they're on a university campus, and they had a networking infrastructure that was a little bit different. Multiple VLANs, multiple types of traffic flying around their facility. They could have just as easily, and this is the way it started, they could have, you know, used a dedicated switch for their audio over IP network. Okay, that's just fine. But they wanted some interoperability. They wanted to consolidate some of their hardware. It can be done. You can use a consolidated set of networking hardware for multiple purposes, but you have to do it very, very carefully. And we have some installations where that's being done, and it's you know, it does require some very careful planning. But again, back to IP networking. You can build an IP network as robust as the budget will allow. So I think what they ended up with finally at WPR was a monstrous Cisco 4000 series blade core. It's got just a ridiculous amount of capacity in it. But so there was also some, at the time, there was some third-party hardware that claimed to be natively compatible with the system, but there were some issues. A lot of that has since been worked out. And again, with AES-67 now, I think we're going to see more and more interoperability. Transitioning from the old plant to the new and existing facility while still keeping everything on the air, I like to compare it to changing the oil in a moving car. It's going down the freeway at 75 miles an hour. No, it's not an easy process. It requires some very careful planning. But like I said, over this period of 5 years, they didn't have any major outages that were related to the transition. So that was a good thing. So, summary. LiveWire Plus AES-67-based infrastructure has many operational advantages for facilities of all sizes. I get a lot of people who ask, well, does it still make sense for a small studio, you know, a small facility, one studio, you know, out in the middle of nowhere? I'm rebuilding my studio. Do I really need to go with audio over IP? The answer to that, no, you don't need to go with audio over IP. But the advantages that it will buy you in the long run are worth the investment. The cost of a good, and I emphasize good, analog console is comparable to what some of the available audio over IP options are now. So whether you've got one studio or whether you've got 100 studios, it's very scalable. Here's another big one. The initial equipment costs can be spread out over several years as the system is expanded, and it allows a migration path from the existing infrastructure. Again, it's something that has to be carefully planned, carefully considered, but it is certainly a possibility from a budgetary and a planning standpoint. Lower overall total cost of ownership, particularly when upgrading an older analog facility. Maybe you've got equipment that's, you know, reaching that 15, 20-year lifespan and starting to fail. So it might be worth looking at some upgrades. And there are a variety of equipment options available. I mentioned two that Axia offers, the Element console and the Radius console. Slightly different approaches to building it out, slightly different approaches to building your switching infrastructure. Talk to us. We can help you plan a system. All right. Wow, I still have 18 minutes left. That's Time for questions. Yeah.
You mentioned a few minutes ago about the possibility of integrating various IP purposes over the same switching system, and that it must be done with care. I have found that, in my experience, it's best not to do any of that sort of thing at all. However, it might be of interest for you, since you have all this time, to give us a few hints on dealing with the possibility of mixed data sources and paths over the same switching system. How do you do it carefully?
Okay, well, first of all, I'll preface this by saying that this particular installation was a university environment. So they're already used to dealing with very large switching infrastructures, different purposes across a common network. I mean, it doesn't make sense in the university environment for them to deploy multiple networks for, say, their VoIP system, their office traffic, and et cetera, et cetera. And that's very common, deploying VoIP, deploying your office traffic on the same common switching infrastructure. That's pretty common. The same would apply for audio over IP. But again, things that you have to consider. First of all, the capacity of the switch. How much is the backplane capacity on the switch? What do your backbone connections between switches look like? Is 1 gig enough, or do you need to go to 10 gig? Again, it's all going to depend on the size of your installation. Do you have a redundant switching infrastructure in place, like a loop or something that that connects multiple switches together for your backbone? VLANing, things like segmenting your traffic out on VLANs becomes important. QoS becomes critical in setting up your switches. And these are all things that that support can help define as you're working to deploy a system like this. So it can be done, but again, it has to be done very intentionally and very carefully. So, next question.
Yeah, I wonder if you have any knowledge about program providers and if they're getting on board with this VoIP, and specifically, let's say a satellite provider, are they working toward or have they already started embedding their commands, their triggers into audio output from their devices?
Well, I can't talk about specific program providers other than maybe my experience with the public radio satellite system and their deployment of satellite receivers. PRSS, the public radio satellite system, actually has a full AXIA infrastructure at their NOC. So what they're doing is they actually are transmitting all of their contact closures over the satellite system's multicast IP. And on the back of the satellite receiver, the same port where I get the live wire audio traffic out, the GPIO comes along with that. And I suspect that over time, more and more providers are going to kind of adopt that type of approach. We're getting to a point where discrete wiring really doesn't make as much sense anymore. The technology has matured to the point where, if you're doing discrete wiring to GPIOs, it's probably because it's not supported by your, there's no other method that's supported in that particular installation. So.
Hey, Shane.
Hi, Kirk. Are you here to heckle me?
No. I'm Shane's colleague, Kirk, and I wanted to address a bit more the question about putting several things on the same network. And in the environment where Shane has come from, where you have a larger university environment, you often have a very capable staff,
yes.
IT staff. The biggest reason why we've always suggested to not mix is because if you try to put audio over IP and all of the signals that go along with that, clocking is a big deal.
Yes.
If you try to put that on a network that's not qualified to handle it, you may find that nothing else happens on that network. So if you accidentally plug a live wire network into a network that has, say, a Wi-Fi hotspot on it, and that Wi-Fi hotspot is not a top-notch industrial strength hotspot, then everything will cease happening on that network. It'll just be awful. So we've always, for example, I have several radio stations, small town stations, where we do things inexpensively. And sure, we can handle all kinds of non-AXIA traffic, non-live wire traffic on our live wire network, but not vice versa. We never get the live wire AOIP traffic on the business network. We leave that, you know, make sure it doesn't happen that way. So, for example, I have a LiveWire qualified IP radio link from my one of my studio sites to a transmitter site using literally a $300 pair of IP radios. And LiveWire goes over that, but so does HTTP just fine. I can update equipment out there using file transfers. So it's easy to mix in one direction, but not smart to mix in the other direction. Yeah. That being said, Minnesota Public Radio wanted LiveWire everywhere.
Yep.
And so they incorporated some really heavy-duty Cisco switches.
And that's what we did at Wyoming Public Media
as
well.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. So that's all I wanted to add.
No, it's an excellent point to keep in mind. Most installations, yeah, you're probably going to keep your IP, your AOIP network completely separate from every other network. But there are cases where you would want to, where it might make sense to consolidate those, and it can be done, but again, careful consideration. So, yeah.
My experience with it, we have several of the elements and all. We had a connection from our LiveWire is a dedicated system, but we do have a connection to the business LAN. Mm-hmm. And the major reason for that was we do a lot of remote hosts. And so for them to see the call screening capabilities, we had to provide that. IS upgraded their whole infrastructure. We had worked very diligently when the first installation was put to put protections for it. IS upgraded their system between Christmas and New Year's a couple of years ago.
Oh boy.
And they forgot the solution to it, which I was just only part of it. But because of the IGMP querier move to their system, we brought down their entire network.
This sounds awfully familiar.
because of that. So we now have a firewall between the two.
Yep.
So that does not happen.
Yep. IGMP
querier has to be on the LiveWire network.
It does, yeah. And one of the biggest reasons you might interconnect your LiveWire network and your office network would be for, guess what, management. And there are a number of ways to accomplish that. In fact, all of the new X nodes and a lot of the new hardware now actually have two Ethernet ports. So if you wanted to, you could run, you know, you could run completely independent networks, one for management and one for your AOIP. Is that necessarily the most practical approach? Well, you decide. It's up to you to decide how to implement this. And like I said, there are plenty of right ways and probably even more wrong ways to implement this stuff. So, next. Oh, is the mic on?
Hello.
There he is.
Steve Johnston, Wisconsin Public Radio. A lot of excitement surrounded AES-67 as a breakthrough, and I suppose it is if you had two vendors in the same room, but I'm more interested in wide area connectivity and without GPIO information, without routing and metering. I'm not clear on any advantage to it in that scenario than just normal linear streaming from
sure.
one place to another.
Well, wide area networking it's another angle entirely. Telos actually does have a multi-channel codec called the iPort that you can interface to a LiveWire network, and it will carry all of that GPIO information across to whatever your remote destination. Now, are you talking about fixed links, or are you talking about just general anybody with an IP codec dials into your plant?
Well, not anyone, but within an organization.
Okay.
It wouldn't be public in this sense, but AES-67 seems to me to be just AES audio over Ethernet.
Yeah, it's the equivalent of, okay, now we've given you the AES EBU cable over Ethernet.
Right.
You still need to run your serial, your GPIO. Now, that being said, it's coming. There are additional standards that are in the works. Some of you probably heard of AES X210 for the control half of this equation. That project is still in progress, and LiveWire Plus, the intention is to integrate any new standards as they come along, as a practice.
I think that's really the breakthrough that's needed for AES-67 to be important to us.
Exactly, and that's, you know, that's the whole point behind standards. Uh-oh, here's trouble. Mr. Tarr.
Hi there, Chris Tarr. My job title is Shane Tovin's adversary. I was wondering if you'd just start your presentation over. I missed part of it. No, I'm just kidding. AES-67 with LiveWire, is that something that's compatible now with the current nodes and X-nodes, or is that going to be a software update?
It actually is in the current X-nodes right now.
Okay, so it natively talks AES-67?
Correct.
Okay.
Yep.
Awesome.
Anybody else? Come on, Alex. I know you were begging to. Yeah. We have another one over here.
Good morning. Mark from WGBU Public Media in Grand Rapids, Michigan. If you mentioned that AES-67 can do unicast as
Correct.
Well as multicast, if you wanted to set up like a point-to-point then with unicast, do you need a Cisco switch for the IGMP, or can you get away with kind of down and dirty?
That much I'm not sure about. I know that the capability is there for unicast, and if it's not doing multicast, you shouldn't need the IGMP for managing that. But you'll still need the bandwidth, you'll still need QoS, you'll still need to make sure that you've got all the other appropriate conditions in place.
Okay, so yes, it sounds like
it's a lot more forgiving than multicast.
Okay.
So, from that standpoint.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. In front here.
So in a small organization, you'd have the power of control, like Kurt's little stations, to make the choices about network integration. In the larger environments, like corporate environment or university environment, somebody else holds the keys to the network fabric if it's got to leave your studio facility, probably. There was a question about unicasting. You mentioned it. I didn't know when you talked about the integration at Wyoming, mm-hmm. If you did multicast across the campus and you got support of the networking team from the university to do that, then I know you said your
sure.
support can help with that. Have you got like white papers or, you know, recipes for guys that are not audio engineers but are network engineers
sure.
To follow?
Talk to support. We do have some really brilliant guys there. I'll call one out by name, Jeff McGinley. He is like the switch guru. And even I'll talk to him from time to time, and some of the tricks that he gives me are just absolutely amazing. But to kind of address your question about larger installations, maybe a university installation, specifically with the case of Wyoming Public Media, the university just handed them a fiber with several VLANs on it to their backbone and said, don't screw up our network.
Well, VLANs provide logical isolation,
right.
but you still have to share the bandwidth.
Yeah, exactly. And all that was coming over that fiber from the university campus was really general purpose internet traffic, traffic to the rest of the campus systems. But there was no multicast on that particular VLAN other than what the university was sending in. It was blocked, or the LiveWire stuff was blocked by VLAN at the switch. It was at our switch, at WPR switch. It was not going out to the campus network at all. In theory, since they do have things like VoIP running on that whole infrastructure, they could have set up some conditions on their infrastructure to allow us to pass LiveWire over
and
campus.
And as you indicated, it just takes a little TLC
exactly.
to make it work
and
properly, and you really have to get their buy-in. You can't
right.
just plug it in and expect it to work
it
like a web
really,
browser.
Yeah, exactly. When you're dealing with university and corporate IT departments, they're about as different, I mean, as East and West. They're all over the map in terms of what they're comfortable with, what they'll allow. But if you're fortunate enough to have a very cooperative corporate or campus IT department, boy, I mean, the world's your oyster. You can do just about anything. It's pretty cool.
So in an effort to make this from end to end, I know that there's some microphone gear from Telos now, and mm-hmm. you can get IP connectivity to the transmitter, and mm-hmm. if you talk to Jeff Welton, you can get a transmitter with LiveWire input.
Mm-hmm.
What do we do about some other pieces? The public radio satellite system has got LiveWire with GPIO,
right.
so that's a huge hurdle that's been jumped. I know
right.
you can buy LiveWire audio drivers for automation systems.
Right.
Can you speak a little bit about automation integration with LiveWire and the nightmare that's usually the GPIOs with with those, and I don't know, maybe nobody from ENCO paid me to to talk about that, but I recently worked on an ENCO system, and like everybody else, if it's an analog plant, you know, if I've got this big breakout box on the back of the rack, and you know, it's spider's web.
Sure.
It'd be nice to get rid of that.
It's something that has always been a hurdle. GPIO has always been kind of the thorn in the side of broadcasters, it seems. It's that extra signal that you've just got to get from point A to point Z. We are working with various automation manufacturers and, in fact, streamlining a lot of the GPIO stuff. So the answer is yes, it can work. You can get the GPIO in and out of the automation system seamlessly on and off of the AOIP network with LiveWire. But the implementation is going to vary slightly between vendors. So
what about EAS?
I knew somebody was going to ask about EAS. In what regard?
Just the fact that, you know, here I've done this digitization end to end, and all of a sudden I have to break it out or something in order to, you know, run it through that box and get it back.
Well, I'd love to see an EAS manufacturer incorporate LiveWire into their box, but so far that, at least that I'm aware of, that hasn't happened yet. But what a lot of people are doing is actually taking the EAS IO and just running it in and out of a node, and then doing GPIO from the EAS to trigger a route change when that happens. The other option is, of course, to put it somewhere at the very last point where it leaves the AOIP network and interrupt it after that. I mean, both
work. I guess that was old school thinking that it had to be in line. I hadn't thought about making it a source.
No, you can take a GPIO from your EAS unit and trigger a route change on your AOIP network to inject that traffic. And yes, I know there are probably some engineers here going, no, it's got to be in line. Well, yeah, so.
I'm a TV guy, so I don't know what they specifically do in radio stations, but there's a lot of converting from digital to IP. Are there going to be more devices, even simple things like CD players or a turntable, that will have an IP connection and go right into the system?
I'm glad you mentioned that. And actually, to address television specifically, there's now an SDI X node that will allow you to get audio on and off of an SDI plant on and off of an AOIP network. And we're going to see more and more of that convergence. It's just going to continue, across the board. So, all right. Well, I'm at 45 seconds. We actually wrapped up on time here. So thank you all very much.